Mr. Black, Reel 3. We've talked about the officers in your particular section. What about the NCOs? And again, we're in these early days.
In the early days, when we first went away, we had... our section was the... I think it was the lowest rank of any of the section. We just had a Lance Corporal as the section... the detachment. You want sections or...
We're coming through to your detachment.
To the detachment.
Sorry, the detachment.
Yes, we had Jackie Pearson. He was, bit of a disciplinarian. You had to be, but nothing sort of untoward.
What rank did he hold?
He was only a Lance Corporal. We had another Lance Corporal who was Lance Corporal Hills, who was a regular army man, and who's a typical overseas, served in India or all over the place, and rough and ready and gruff, but he was all right. And then, of course, after that was just the Sabbath.
Do you recall any of those by
name? Yes. Stan Street was... he was the SLO, was a good friend of mine. Vince Brown was on the sound locator with me. Ray Elliott, he was the Lister man. Bruce.
Their backgrounds were... was it miners or no? Well, shipyard workers?
Stan was the same. He worked in the shipyards. Ray Elliott worked for the council. J.J. Bruce, as we called him. He was a fitter. We actually what we had as well, not particularly in our detachment, but we had quite a lot of people from the likes of Ray Rolls and those sort of places in the unit. Jimmy Nesworthy was the cook, or he was our second cook. The first one we got rid of because he was terrible, the mason. he couldn't boil an egg. But yes. This was it, you see.
That's your section cook, is that?
The detachment.
The detachment.
Cook.
Yes. So you cooked your own food, basically.
Yes. I mean, the rations were sent out in a ration lorry each day, a big box of rations, and he had to do it. He had to do it on the most primitive of things. I mean, when we were first called up, we were in the militia huts on proper sites with a cookhouse and everything. But I mean, we were only there for about 6 weeks. Then we were put on just open sites, and you had a bell tent and a couple of bell tents for the whole of the detachment, a little cooking shelter. Your oven, you had to construct your own. They gave you an oil drum and said, get on with it and make an oven. And we did. You put that on bricks with a fire underneath and covered it with cow dung and that sort of thing for to insulate it. It worked. And then, of course, we got the famous hydro burners out a little bit later. But again, very, very basic. And that was the thing with practically the whole of the war. I mean, I never, ever sort of got into big barracks or anything like that. I was always on a detachment.
What was your particular role in the first instance, in the first searchlight you were on?
I was number 7 on the sound locator.
Now, you described those as like
it,
as horns.
It took 4 big trumpets, yes.
How could you measure height and whatever?
Well, you didn't actually measure height. You were just guided by sound.
You had no kind of indicators?
Nothing at all. You had this 4 trumpet, as I say, with a sight, like a clock sight, and that was for the aim off. I mean, mine as number seven was to... it was a bit more difficult than the horizontal one, because the horizontal one, when we used to train... They had a buzzer going across, and you were blindfolded, and but you could follow it. But on the vertical one, when you're up and down, it was a bit more difficult to find it. I mean, okay, the chap that was on the horizontal, he got you sort of roughly in that direction, and it was up to you to search, search up and down.
And then you shouted to the instructions to the.
Well, once you got on, you shouted on target, and the number six, as I say, looked through the sights and estimated the aim off, and then he shouted that to the detachment commander on target, and from there it was exposed beam.
A bit hit and missy, isn't it?
Oh, it was hit and missy all the way through.
So you were called up on the 24th of August.
That's right.
As you were saying. Yeah. What happened then?
Well, I reported for work that particular morning at about 12 o'clock. There was notification from the drill hall to my work that I had to report to the drill hall immediately. Well, I set off back home to get my uniform. My mother was away for the day. There was no one at home. So I just picked up my uniform, put it on, picked up all my gear, and went to the drill hall. When I got to the drill hall, it was literally organised chaos. There was all sorts of transport there. We had northern buses, we had lorries, we had contractors' lorries, we had the actual lorries for the searchlights and the big guy lorries and Thornycroft lorries. And everybody was sort of getting their the detachments were getting their gear on board. Well, yeah, as I see, you had 24 detachments there, and all the stuff had to be taken, including headquarters stuff. So we set off from Northfield Gardens in a convoy consisting of everything: army lorries, buses, private cars, private motorcycles, contractors' vans, contractors' lorries, and we made our way down to Easenwold, and that was our battery headquarters. From there, we were taken out into what to me was the depth of the country, a little place called Aldwark, round about Easenwold in Yorkshire, and landed on this. As I say, it had been built for the militia, because they were the huts. Yes, so it was quite good, but no comforts there. I mean, the first when we got there, we lay on the bare board to the floor with a ground sheet underneath it and our greatcoats on top, and that was it, until we got organised with blankets and a straw palliasse and this sort of thing. Yes, it was quite. But of course, going through all the villages, you had the people as we're going through, you know, oh, go on, good old lad, to hell with Hitler. And,
and of course, war hadn't yet been
declared. War hadn't started, Oh, no, I mean, they obviously, you know, it was going on.
What did you feel like that this was no longer, you know, fun, you might say? You were going into a real serious situation.
Oh, yes.
Did you have any feelings? Now being in effect, you're now a regular soldier.
The only feelings we had was a little bit feeling of trepidation, because as we were leaving the drill hall, I remember the sergeant major, as he was then, Sergeant Major Baker. He was the battery sergeant major. He came up to our detachment. He says, I've got you now. Yeah, you're no longer civilians. You're no longer civilians. Remember that. He was a bit of an author, you know.
So you were now in militia huts, How long were you there?
We're only there about 6 weeks.
And in those 6 weeks, what were you doing?
Well, principally digging in the searchlight, making. We couldn't actually dig into the ground, so we had to sandbag and turf wall the searchlight, And I'm not kidding, by the time they finished, an atom bomb wouldn't have got through. The walls were so thick. I think we overdid it, but of course that was a bit of the engineer training as well. We used to just carry on with drills and this sort of thing. I mean, learning still.
Was this the detachment on this?
Detachment. There was only a detachment.
This was your militias.
That's just 10 men that were on there.
So where were the huts that you were sleeping in, living in relation to your particular searchlight?
About a couple of hundred yards away.
And, of course, it was a question then of getting out as quickly as you could. You were still training to do this.
So, yes. Again, as I said earlier, never had our clothes off for about that 6 weeks. We used to be on literally permanent stand two and used to take sentry duty. There used to be two sentries on at a time. Well, there's only 10 men. So it was a question of 2 hours on sentry duty and then 4 hours off. That's the maximum amount of sleep you could get. And you could be called out any time in that. We weren't. I mean, after the first, the first false alarm on September the 3rd, it was very, very quiet, really, after that.
But pretty demanding for,
It was very, very demanding, yeah.
And were you able to settle down to that routine? Was it difficult to get used to it?
Strangely enough, it was the younger ones that settled down to it better than the older ones. I mean, we did have an episode where a couple of the older fellas wanted, I'm going back to my family. They sent off on going back. They were jolly sharp marched back to the place.
Before we move further on, could you tell me how you maintained the searchlights and kept them in a high state of readiness?
Yeah, well, it was a question really of looking after the virtually the outside. I mean, it was the casing was sort of oiled and polished up. Strange enough, the brasses all had to be kept very bright. I mean, they would have frowned on that later on, but we had to do that. And as I said earlier, the lining up of the ark and that, and the principal thing was the cleaning of the big 90-centimetre mirror. I mean, that had to be taken off the back of the searchlight and very, very carefully cleaned.
How was it taken off? How was it fastened? Well,
it was fastened on with thumb screws on the back and just lifted up. It took two men at least to take it off. It had to be very careful. Yeah, it hadn't had a mark on it at all.
How did you clean it? What did you clean it with?
Well, just ordinary, mirror polish. It could be. I forget exactly what it was they used.
Was that a daily task?
That was a daily task. That was one of the first tasks in the morning. Oiling the mechanical parts of the searchlight, the long arm and the operator's hand wheel, etc. Operating the sort of little caterpillars that the searchlight was mounted on. And then, of course, there was the sound locator. Didn't take any, just had to be kept clean and moving parts oiled. The Lister had a series of tasks to be done, but that was the chap on the that was on the list. That was his job to do that. Just ordinary, literally car maintenance. Any main maintenance was done by a maintenance squad from headquarters. Periodically, they would come down and strip the thing right down and see that everything was okay.
But what faults did occur on them? What were the things you had to keep looking at?
Well, I really can't remember any at all.
These carbon arms, were they?
Oh, yeah. Well, you had to replace the carbons at times. But I mean, I can't remember any sort of any faults at all with them. It was the equipment in itself was good. No doubt about that.
Right, we can come back to your huts now. You say it was pretty primitive. You didn't have anything to lie on when you first got there, for example. At what point in time, or if they did in the time that you were there, did you start getting beds and proper facilities?
Well, I never had a bed all the time we were in the huts. We had a straw palliasse. And about once a month you get an exchange of straw, but that was it.
And you'd have to keep the hut clean, did you?
Well, this Lance Corporal that we had got into bother because he insisted that the hut was scrubbed out every day. Now, it never got a chance to dry out, and of course you're lying on the medical officer came around and actually found out about this, and he tore a strip off him. He says, "You will not do that." He says, "These men," he says, "they haven't got beds to lie on." He says, "They're not lying on a wet floor." So it stopped that. But it still, well, they had to be kept really clean. I mean, they were inspected by the section officers, and the troop sergeant used to come round and inspect things. You weren't allowed to be slovenly.
What were the latrines? Were they in huts?
The latrines, in that particular instance, we had a screen with the buckets and a platform. It was a bit of an advance on what we eventually had when we went into the tents.
You've mentioned that you cooked, each detachment did its own cooking. What kind of food were you getting? What, for example, would you get for breakfast?
Oh, you got bacon, egg, tomato, principally canned tomato and that, and bacon. You didn't get a lot of eggs, but of course, we're in the country, we could go to the farm and get it. We used to go and buy eggs for the detachment, club in and buy our own eggs, and that bacon and eggs. Porridge every morning, that was the start of the day.
And for dinner?
Dinners, I mean, it was quite reasonable. I mean, there was also a joint of meat of some description, either a joint or steaks or something like that, or the famous McConaughey's, the stew, rice puddings, this sort of thing.
And did you get a tea break?
Oh, yes, there was always sort of cheese, bread, but a piece of naffy cake or something like that, yeah.
And army tea, presumably.
Oh yes, army tea.
Now, was that served up in a bucket, or what?
It was made in a bucket at first and served in your mess tin. But eventually,
did they put anything in the tea?
You heard all sorts of things that they put in the tea for suppress certain actions, but no, I never actually saw anybody put it in. I mean, certainly not on the detachments. Whether they did this in the in the big billets or anything like that, I don't know, but we certainly didn't get any instructions for to put anything in the tea.
Was there any canteen there?
Oh no canteen. Not at that particular time. We had nothing. I mean, you just you depended on the local shop in the village, which was quite a walk down to. But you could get down to there. Eventually, we should depend quite a lot on the Salvation Army when we're on these sites, or the Naffy mobile canteens that would come round.
You've intimated the local people were, you know, very good.
Oh yes, the people in the farm were excellent. I mean, they more or less accepted us into their home. If we had time off at night, we could go across there and have a game of cards or something with them, as long as we're in hail and distance of the site.
Do you remember the name of the farm and the people?
Oh, I can't remember that, no. Just it was at Old Walk. And
young men in the army in uniform in a local area where presumably they hadn't seen men. Did you have the girls coming up to the camp?
There wasn't a lot of girls around at Old Walk. I don't know, I think we're too far out of the village for them to bother getting coming up there. I remember it was a long, narrow track that we used to have to walk up to the village.
And this would be autumn?
Well, September, October, yes.
What was the weather like?
Beautiful. We used to help the farmer with these, when they're gathering the corn in, and there was a bit of rabbit stew on the menu after that, because, you know, they used to cut it round the edges, and gradually the rabbits would go into the centre, and of course the farmers would get them with their guns and everything. we always got a rabbit or two for to help out.
And I was going to say that the farmer wasn't upset that you were taking up part of his land with your various sites.
No, I think he got a bit upset with the authorities, but certainly not with us, because they did get they didn't get a lot of compensation, but I mean they did get something for it. You know, if they, as I say twice, I mean we know that the farmers sort of didn't accept us actually being over there, but I mean once we're on there, we were accepted, and they took up their troubles with the authorities, the army authorities. And mind, they had a fight with them at times.
So, what time was Reveille?
Normally, Reveille was at 6:30.
And what was your immediate task, obviously, after you got out of bed?
Well, the immediate task was to get washed and shaved, and then have breakfast, and then tidy our bed up. When we did get blankets, fold the blankets, and I mean, even though we're detached like that, the kit still had to be laid out in barrack room fashion. So there was nothing slovenly about it.
So all your equipment was laid out.
All the equipment was laid out. Yeah,
kit inspection.
Literally kit inspection.
And that was done properly. Any thieving going on at all? Was anything stolen?
I had one or two letters that were taken. We eventually found them, but what had happened, I had an auntie in South Shields who occasionally sent me a half-crown postal order. And of course, I think this lad got to know about it, and he helped himself. He was found out. We trapped him. Didn't do anything. We could have shopped him to there, but we didn't. We did sort of dealt with him myself, and he never did it again.
Was this physical punishment for him, or?
Oh no. He was told about it in no certain term what would happen to him if he did anything like that again. That was the odd thing. If you lost your knife, you took someone else's. I mean, that was an established thing, but not a lot of thieving went on at all.
How did you get on with the people in the hut?
Well, I got on very well with them, yeah.
And any bullying?
No.
Barrack room lawyers
You had barrack room lawyers, you always got those, but they were kept in their place.
You had your breakfast this year. Your working day, what might you be doing?
Well, you see, the first thing was the maintenance that we've talked about earlier. And then we'd have sort of searchlight drill and this sort of thing. Instruction on the Lewis gun. Sort of dummy loading and this sort of thing. And then...
Did you have a morning break?
Oh, yes. You could more or less take a morning break when you went on. It was, you know, on detachment, it was quite loose discipline. They didn't say, right, you can have a morning break from 10:30 to 10:45. You took the morning break when it was convenient. I mean, you had gas instruction and this sort of thing. In between these various, literally, classes, the cook would give a pot of tea or something like that.
You mentioned gas there. What form of instruction did that take?
Well, it was just a question of at that particular time how to get your respirator on in the shortest possible time, and used to do gas drill on the actual equipment, on the searchlight with your respirators on, and the Lewis gun with the respirators on.
Did that make it difficult to do your work on the
side? It did, really. Yes.
Thinking particularly of where you had to.
With the spotters, they couldn't have operated had there been a gas attack, because you can imagine it's bad enough with your ordinary eyesight, but when you're peering through two eye holes, literally, and they used to mist up, although you used anti-mist on them.
The gas training didn't include going into a gas hut and having
not at this particular time. I mean, eventually, if you're coming onto the sort of when you go into depth with it, we certainly did.
But not in these initial detachments,
no.
What time would the dinner time break be?
Around about 12 o'clock.
How long would you get?
Well, about an hour, an hour and a half.
And the afternoons, how did you fill those in?
The afternoons, we were allowed for to have a couple of hours sleep if you weren't on guard duty. That was to make up for the fact that you never got a full night's sleep. So between about half past one and half past three, it was into bed or out of the barracks.
Even having been on night, it must be difficult just to sleep in the middle of a day.
Well, you couldn't. I mean, you rested, and that was about all. I used to read quite a lot at those periods.
And after that period was over, what would you do?
Well, literally, when the hut and we had got ourselves established with tables, etc., we did quite a bit of reading and that sort of thing. There was no electricity as such in the hut. We had hurricane lamps. But the local people in the village gave us, I think it had been in that church, a magnificent oil lamp, which gave off quite a lot of heat. So we were able to do reading for that. They did send little radios around, battery-operated radios, which would listen to them. But, of course, you had to be careful, because once your battery ran out, it was a hell of a job to get a new battery out of them.
How was the hut heated? Did you have a stove?
Well, we had a stove inside, yes, a coke stove.
And so obviously deliveries of coke to the site.
Well, we had coke delivered to the site, yes.
And in the after your work had finished at the end of the day, you would be on, what, your own leisure time?
Oh, yes, yes, I see, reading. That's all you could do, a game of cards probably or something like that.
Was that gambling when you say game of cards?
No.
Didn't have a gambling school going.
Oh, no, I never took part in a gambling school. You know, obviously on some of them they did, but I've never been afforded to lose, so I could never afford to gamble.
And presumably you'd have your equipment and uniform to clean.
Oh, yes, well, you had that to do. I mean, if you're blank-wearing and things like that, you normally did that at night time, polished your shoes and...
How was your equipment and uniform stored? Did you have any place to keep it?
No. It was stored literally on your kit, on your blankets.
So it must be very difficult to keep it.
Well, it was. You had at that particular time, we had a couple of hooks for to hang our greatcoats on, and that was it.